Welcome to episode 345 of the Pesky Report, brought to you by Beyond the Monster. I'm Matthew Corey, and I'm joined today by Kevin, aka Post-op Kevin Round 2. And this is the official podcast of being allergic to touching the bases. Before we get into anything else, please make sure to follow us on the socials. Social media kind of critical to growing the brand and has gotten us, you know, a lot of where we've been today. We'd love to stay in touch with you guys throughout the week. I know we got highlights going up during the games. We got content going out there. So stay in touch with us. We'd love to connect with you there. I almost said connect with you there. That's like a weird way to say it. They're going to just unfollow us now because I just right. almost, just said, right. almost said connect yeah, with us. But we're on Instagram, Twitter, at Pesky Report. Yes. What's up, Kevin?
The Sunday live stream as well. Check out what we're kind of doing with this live stream on Sundays. I believe it's on Twitch and also uploaded to YouTube, I believe.
Yes.
Check that out.
Yes. And this week we got the audio uploaded to our podcast stream as well. So
yes,
great news. But very yeah, cool. that's a little bit around plugging the podcast. And, speaking of plugging, there's a lot of holes in this team right now, and, we got to plug some of them. So, let's dive into it. Let's dive into it. We can go game by game, I guess. But before we do that, we know, obviously it was a 4-game series. Against
yes.
the Cleveland Guardians. They are the number one record in baseball. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And they won 3 out of 4. So how are you feeling just coming out of the afternoon game today? I know you probably weren't awake for the game, but kind of what's your take on the series? Here, Kevin.
Yeah, I was not awake for the game. I had another back procedure today. Everything went well. So thanks good. To everyone who checks in and looks out for me. It doesn't go unnoticed. But I did get enough of a recap, and I did check out the other 3 games. And this team doesn't feel like a 10-10 .500 team. It just doesn't. I believe if we don't commit an error, we're 8-1. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that sounds about right. We're 8-1. You know, Hamilton is allergic to touching the bag. Poor defense again. Starting rotation has been the absolute bright spot of this team and the lineup for whatever reason. When they score a lot of runs, then the pitching and the bullpen decides to give up a lot of runs. So we're losing games when we're actually scoring. So just, you know, it always sucks to drop 3 or 4. You know, we get swept by the O's. We lose 3 out of 4 to a good Guardians team, and these are the better teams in baseball. So right now to be 1-6 against them, it just doesn't feel good. And I'm not expecting much out of this Red Sox team. I don't want to lead people on. If you know, I'm not going to tell people how to fan, but me personally, I wasn't expecting a lot from this group. But to be 1-6 against, you know, some of the better teams in baseball just is kind of uncomfortable right now.
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating. And the worst part is this is reminding me so much of the comments that Tom Warner made before the season, where he said, you know, the front office told me that if we had just had played slightly better defense, you know, we would have been potentially, 8-10 win better team last yeah. season. And it's starting to play out exactly like that again. It's absolutely insane. We cannot have peace. To quote Jared Carabas, he's been putting it on Twitter all week. He's like, I just can't have peace. I guess that's how it is. The shortstop position, other than Sedan Rafaela, who played a great game at shortstop, the one game he played there, we haven't had a single game where someone's played a solid game of shortstop. And this is the thing, though, is it's not just like, I know we're leading the league in errors. So that's by itself, like embarrassing. We're worse than the Oakland A's. And I think we have 20 errors and they have 17.
yeah.
So it's top of having the most errors. There's other plays that we've been making that don't count as errors, but like they certainly feel like errors. Like there's been a couple of hits that have gone right through our gloves, or like they technically scored a hit, but it's like, okay, that was an error. Or this happened multiple times the other night in the extra innings game where the ball was hit to Valdez and he like doesn't even attempt to turn a double play. He just throws it to first and there's only one out. And then, you know, it's like, we're just giving free runs up because there's a guy on, I think it was first and third, ball gets hit to him. He doesn't even try to turn a double play. He just throws it to first, which with our track record of turning double plays, maybe he's just like, all right, go for the guaranteed out. We can't even guarantee that we're going to turn a double play, which is a sad state to be in. But like, that's not an error, but we gave up a free base runner that could have been a double play. You know, we're causing our pitchers to have to throw more pitches, face more batters. We're wearing them down. Predictable home runs are happening. Predictable runs are being given up. And like today, we lost the game today. I think it was two of those runs or three of those runs were unearned. Mm-hmm. Once again, there was a two-run throwing error by Pablo Reyes. David Hamilton made an error at shortstop again today. It's so bad, man. It's so bad. And we have given up over 26 unearned runs this year. Like, are you kidding me? This is just the reason why you're saying it feels weird that we're a 500 team. Were you saying because you feel like we should be better or because we should be worse?
I don't know. I don't want to say, I feel like a lot of games we have been in a position to win. Right. So I feel like if you clean up the defense a little bit, that, you know, we might have 13 wins, right? We might be 13-7. We might be 14-6 easily. And I don't want to give this false hope of like, oh, well, we're 14-6 and we're going, you know, out to Pittsburgh and hopefully we lay beating on them, because I don't know. With the lineup that's being thrown out there, lineup card that's being thrown out there, the defense that's being put behind these starting pitchers, the unearned runs that you talk about, you cannot give up unearned runs to good ball clubs. You just can't do it. So I guess in the grand scheme of things, I'm okay with the Red Sox being a 500 team, but it feels like they should have more wins, right? But I'm now going to debate myself and say, but it also feels like the losses we have are so shitty. Not to sound dramatic, but it's just the losses that we've had are so shitty because of the unearned runs, the errors, letting guys get the base to base, letting guys score when they have to, like at will. It's just, you know, I don't know. I'm not gonna go on this whole rant because it's defense, but my God, I mean, what'd you say, 26, 27 unearned runs in Major League Baseball? I don't see how you win many games with those kind of numbers, 20 errors. It's just not good.
Yeah, I can't even fathom how bad it is. We had 24 unearned runs in 20 games as of the Hamilton error today. It's sloppy, man. And you're right. Like, we should, the way the pitching has been such a miracle. It's been incredible, honestly. And the way the pitching has been, if we look at just the results of pitching, we should be a team that's won at 75% of our games.
Yes.
Right. You factor in, if not 80%, and then you factor in our offense that's been lackluster. And then you can say, okay, maybe we should be winning 70% of our games because the offense hasn't been great. So you factor that in. And then you factor in the defense, and the defense alone costing you another 20% of your wins. Like, it's insane. But like, that's exactly what it is. It's not just one thing. It's one thing that leads to another. The pitching has been the only thing keeping us at a 500 team. If we can just get some of these other things under wraps, this could be a winning ball club. Like, I believe that. Like, just the defense alone would get us to a winning ball club. If we can get the offense on track and the defense on track, this is an elite ball club. And that's the struggle we have right now. I'll ask you this, Kevin, like, if we continue to throw out lineups like we had today or the other night when Bobby Dalbec was batting fifth for us, can the Red Sox possibly stay competitive? Like, what is the answer to the lineup? What the heck are we going to do?
No, the short answer is no. You can't have Bobby D in the five hole and expect to compete against the two of the better teams that we played in, the Orioles and the Guardians. It's just, it's not sustainable. I mean, if it wasn't for Tanner absolutely shoving, right, and throwing the Maddox game that he did last night, the offense went, they went shutout, right, in game one, four runs today, two runs yesterday, and then what did they do in game two? Anyways, the short answer is no. I don't think with the lineup card that...
Game two was the extra innings game that we came back twice.
Yes. And I just don't feel as if Tyler O'Neill, you know, getting hurt, you know, and needing the stitches and being out of the lineup. Rafael Devers, who you know, has something now going on with his knee, although they don't think it'll be an IL stint. You know, it sounds like, you know, he might have just tweaked a little something, but the imaging came back clear. Without those two guys, you saw what this lineup looks like, and it's not good. I mean, I love the Pesky Report, and I love retweeting everything that we put out and on Twitter. And I was looking at the lineup over the last, like, you know, two nights or whatever. I'm like, yeah, I'm not even going to retweet this. Like, I don't even have it in me to, when I'm looking at 1-9 and just going, what are we doing here? So yeah, I made it a long answer, but the answer is no, I don't think we can be competitive with the lineup that we're throwing out there right now.
Yeah, look at this lineup today. So we have Duran leading off and Casas in the two hole, which I don't hate, but that's about as good as it gets. And then you have Abreu batting in the three hole, Valdez batting in the four hole, Connor Wong in the five hole, but he's not a five hitter. Like, when your catcher is performing the way he has been, that's great in the eight spot. You don't want him in the five spot. Then you got David Hamilton in the six, Pablo Reyes in the seven, Reese McGuire in the eight, and Rafaela in the ninth. It's not good. It's just not good. Let me see if I can find here the batting averages for this team right now. This is the batting averages. I'm not going to say the names again, but I'm just going to read off the batting averages after we get to Casas. 184. 154. 342. Shout out to Connor Wong. 182, 179, 275. Shout out to Reese McGuire. And 161. So other than our two catchers, every single person on our team is batting below 200, other than the first two hitters in the lineup.
It's disgusting, right? It's absolutely disgusting. And it's a shame, because I think if you would have asked, you know, this offseason, if you know, what the major concern of this team was going to be this year, wasn't the lineup, right? Everybody was like, oh, we're going to score runs. I still believe that the Red Sox are going to score runs. They always find their way into the top third of runs scored. However, the starting pitching has just been so good. And I think that was everybody's first concern. Everyone's first concern was the starting pitching. And it's a shame, because if you could put some runs behind that, you know, maybe they are a good baseball team. Maybe they are. And listen, we still have 142 games left, right? Like, let's not absolutely, you know, go scorched earth here. But it's just very disheartening, very, very disheartening. I apologize. I think I'm a little choppy right now. But, you know, it's just very, very disheartening that, you know, we could be at a 13, 14, 15 win spot right now. We're sitting at 500, and we've just looked awful against two really good teams.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't disagree with you there. I do want to talk some pitching stats because I do want to talk about
Yes,
that. I
let's
mean, that's a
please do.
positive.
Yes, it's a positive. Absolutely.
It's one thing that we have to look forward to. Like it used to be that when the pitchers, like the pitching innings was be when I would go to the bathroom and I would get a snack and I'd be like, all right, if I'm at the game, I'm like, all right, we're coming up to pitch. Like I'd rather not see this.
Yes.
Now I like look forward to those and I'm gonna go, get some popcorn when, we got the bottom half of our order coming up. So it's just crazy how that tide has shifted when it comes to that. And a lot of times our batters are up and down so fast that I don't even have time to do whatever I'm doing. And I end up missing some of the pitching and I come back and it's already one out. I'm like, oh, what happened? Because they turn them over so fast. But here's some encouragement. So in 2022, I'm going to compare the starters and relievers with how many innings they've pitched in the last 3 seasons. So this is through 19 games. So prior to this morning, this was the breakdown. And I found this on Sox at Sox Notes on Twitter. This is JP Long. He does a great job. If you are interested in a lot of really awesome statistics, he does a great job on Twitter. But through 19 games in 2022, the starters had thrown 89 innings and the relievers had thrown 80 innings. In 2023, the starters had thrown 87 innings and the relievers had thrown 80 innings. In 2024, the starters have thrown 102 innings and the relievers have thrown 72 innings. So through 19 games, we've actually gotten almost 20 full innings more out of our starters than we have in the last 2 seasons. That's awesome. That's the Andrew Bailey effect right there. That shows you the success we've been able to find just right, just in that number alone, because we always struggled with saying where are our innings going to come from. And obviously we saw Whitlock go on the IL in this series. Not ideal. He didn't want to go on the IL. They forced him to. But he's on the IL with I can't remember with what it has to do with his leg.
I thought it was his oblique.
It was his oblique. So he's just on there for I think it's a 10-day IL or yeah, I think it's just the 10 days, and they said they don't think he's going to take much more than that. So that's good. Last I heard, Pivetta was on back on track. He should be back maybe 2 more times through the rotation if all goes well. I don't know if he's throwing full sessions yet, but he should be back pretty soon. We need those guys back because the Andrew Bailey effect is undeniable.
The Andrew Bailey effect is undeniable, and that's an incredible stat that you pulled out there. Almost 20 full innings pitched over 19 games by our starting pitchers. And I want to hammer this home as a positive for this team. You know, if this team, right, you know, you asked me a question, do I think they can compete? And the answer is no. If they are going to compete, this starting pitching needs to remain consistent. And I know there is peaks and valleys throughout a full 162. It is a marathon, not a sprint. But if they can continue any sort of consistency of what they're getting out of, especially with guys like Cutter Crawford and Tanner, then there are signs of hope, right? Maybe you get Vaughn Grissom back. Maybe you get maybe Devers finally gets healthy. O'Neill finally gets healthy. Maybe Yoshida can find his way back into the lineup and not just roll the ball over in the infield. You know, if they can find a way to start putting some runs on the board and clean up, at this point, I'm just asking for like half of the defense. Just bare minimum, clean up half of it. Half of the numbers that you've put, half of the unearned runs, half of the errors. And we're looking at a team that may sneak out a few more wins than I think overall. However, I don't know many franchises in the league where you put so much emphasis on starting pitching before, you know, the going gets rough. You know, they are going to hit lulls. You know, they are going to struggle at times, and the Red Sox are going to really have to ground out some of these games. And right now, they're just haven't been able to.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there. The Tanner Houck start was amazing. Like to watch that
Awesome.
game, we can we I want to get more into that in just a second, so I don't want to get too down the rabbit hole just about Tanner Houck, but I was just looking up. I was trying to find out who had a lower ERA between Cutter and Houck right now, because I am insanely curious to know.
I believe Cutter has the lower.
Let's see. You know, actually, Cutter has the lowest ERA in Major League Baseball for qualified starters.
Yeah.
Yep. He has the lowest ERA right now with a 0.42. So that's amazing. And then, obviously, Tanner Houck's not far behind him with a 1.35 ERA. Tanner Houck has thrown four games this year and has not given up a run in three of them. That's a great fact.
That's awesome.
After Tanner Houck's game last night, the Red Sox led the majors with a 1.85 starting pitcher ERA. This is Boston's lowest starter ERA through 19 games in the live ball era. This is from 1920 onwards, lowest our starter's ERA has ever been, and that includes when we had Pedro Martinez on the team. Keep that in mind. Fantastic. The previous record had been held by the 2018 team, which obviously is a record-setting team, and they had a 2.17 starter ERA through 19 games, and we have a 1.85. That's incredible. Red Sox pitchers have made three scoreless starts of six-plus innings this year. They were all Tanner Houck. In his last five starts, so this is going back to last year, Houck is 4-1 with a 1.10 ERA and a 0.86 whip with a 1.92 opponents batting average, 34 Ks and only five walks. It's pretty incredible. And then with the overall ERA, we do lead the majors as of last night. This is with a 2.74 ERA. It's the club's seventh lowest ERA through 19 games in the live ball era. So it's impressive, man. And like Andrew Bailey, he was talking in a post-game interview. It was a pre-game clip that they had with Jemai. And Jemai was interviewing him, asking him, like, how's it been with the pitching rotation so far? He's actually asking about Garrett Whitlock. And he just gave a quick little injury update. He's like, I'm not going to talk about his injury status, but, you know, he's like, I'll leave that to the medical staff. But he said, you know, the starting rotation has been great so far. And he's like, and I just expect this to continue. You know, I know we talked about how, oh, it's not sustainable. But in his mind, he's like, it absolutely is. I'm expecting more of this. Like, this is my strategy and this is my plan and it's working. Who would you trust in the pinch right now? Is that like, who would you want to rather go with? Would you lean Cutter Crawford right now or Tanner Houck?
That's a great question. I would want to say I'm probably going to go with Cutter. Only because I believe that Cutter's stuff is just a little bit better than Tanner's. And it's not a knock because Tanner has looked absolutely fantastic. I said in the offseason, I said it when he made his first start in Oakland, he was the guy that I was most excited for in this rotation. Cutter, though, being slightly younger, and if he's probably on any other team right now, he's being looked at and valued as, dare I say, ace, right? Or definitely, you know, a two guy in someone's rotation. So I'm just really, really happy. And also the confidence that he's shown on the mound. And what Tanner did last night was so impressive. Throwing a Maddox is just one of the coolest things when it's your team doing it and not the opposing team. Having a game, you know, go under 2 hours, pounding the strike zone. You know, there was a part in the game that I loved. I think it was in either the sixth or the seventh, where Tanner struck out a guy on the corner and they flashed to Bailey in the dugout, and he kind of had this, like, he was holding back like a smirk, almost like,
saw that.
Hell yeah, man. Like, you know, hell yeah, man. Like, your stuff is working. We got the game plan right. This is fun to watch. This is cool to watch. And kudos to Andrew Bailey for doing his job. But overall, I think in a full 162, because I do believe that there are going to be some instances where we've seen even in this season where Tanner has struggled a little bit. And you could say the same for Cutter in his first start in Seattle, where he had to work out of some damage and things like that. But I think over a full season, I'm gonna ride with Cutter, but it is very, very, very close.
Yeah, that's some really good points there. The thing that I think, if I had to go with one, I'd probably go with Hauk, honestly, is because he's been the one who's shown that he can go nine innings. and be that relief for the bullpen. And if you remember his first two games that he went shutout, it was the Tanner Houck, Chase Anderson, let's reset the bullpen games. Those were phenomenal. It was just, you know, Houck came in, Anderson closed it out, pitched the last three innings, and got his two saves for the year, right? And like, it was okay, this is phenomenal. This is all we needed. We just needed those two guys, and like, this is great. And then, you know, he comes in, he gets hit around 12 hits against the Orioles. That was a little brutal. Obviously didn't earn all those runs that were given up against him, but he did give up two home runs, and that was definitely earned. Then he comes in today and throws again, you know, phenomenal masterpiece. So let's get into that. I mean, I think I have to go with Tanner Houck. He can come in and show that he can get through, you know, dominate through six plus innings and be able to show that consistency. And he has a bad start, one out of every four starts, but his ERA is still under two. Like, I'll take that any day. Whereas, like, Cutter Crawford struggled to get out of the fifth inning multiple times. He didn't even make it out. Did he make it out of the fifth inning this time? I can't remember. I feel like he pitched 5 2/3 or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I want to look it up, but I'm afraid my internet's just going to absolutely crap out on me. So I'm gonna put that in your department.
Yeah. But either way, like, let me just see here. Yeah, his last start. Cutter Crawford, only pitcher to allow one or fewer runs and three or fewer hits in each of their first four starts of the season. Wow. He's the only Red Sox pitcher in history to allow one or fewer runs and three or fewer hits in each of their first four starts in the season.
That's awesome.
Okay. That's pretty cool. Cutter Crawford's last five starts. So yeah, he pitched 5 2/3. That's what I thought. No runs, two hits. His last outing was five innings, no runs, two hits. And his first outing of the year was 4.2 innings, one run, two hits.
Six innings in Seattle.
Oh yeah, six innings, one run, but it wasn't an earned run. So it was no earned runs, three hits in Seattle. So yeah, I mean, he's looked really good, but yeah, just it's for me, it's that struggling to get out of the, you know, fifth or sixth inning for him. I think he does have better, like, starting pitchers. I can't even say that. They're so good, man. Like, this rotation
so good
is
right,
like,
now. It's very hard to debate, and you could go either way with these two guys. You make up an excellent point of, I don't know, do you think it's Cutter is just losing gas, you know, three quarters of the way through a start, or do you think it's like maybe the third time through the lineup is he starting to struggle? Because looking at his numbers, I can't pinpoint what's going on here. Six innings, 4 2/3, five.
He just couldn't throw a strike. Like, when you're watching it, like, he just loses like focus. Like, literally, there was one time we talked about it last episode. He threw like eight straight sweepers to get out of an inning because he couldn't find the strike zone. I literally can't figure out what's going on with that, but he looked much better in this game against the Guardians for sure.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I think just because he can show that he can go longer into games right now, I'd have to go with Hauck, but these guys are a phenomenal punch. And to think going into this year, man, like, this is our 3 and 5 starters, and we have like the most faith and the most confidence in them right now than anyone else. Like, that's a great sign. And these are one of those things that you talked about it. We said before the season started, multiple things have to go right for this team to be good. And this was like the biggest question mark we needed. I think we said we needed one of these guys to hit, maybe two. And like, every single guy is hit. They just aren't healthy all at the same time right now.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing how, you know, Bailey adapts to throughout the season, right? Because I know right now they're doing the typical Bailey thing where they're not relying on their fastball. They're relying on more movement pitches, more off-speed pitches. I really am curious to see when teams, especially like the Orioles, who seem to figure out a game plan to kind of sit back on some of those off-speed and movement pitches and then capitalize on fastballs when some of these guys got into trouble. I'm interested to see what Bailey, how he adapts as the season goes along, because he does, like you said, his comments and in his mindset right now is, no, this is sustainable. Like, we don't want anyone to freak out. You know, we want kind of like, I want Red Sox Nation to know that this is what I was brought here to do. And I want the starting pitching to be the best that they can possibly be. So I'm really, really, really interested to see how he maneuvers that through a full season.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in that. So just to before we close the book on the Hauk start, he threw a complete game shutout last night. It was the quickest game since Galarraga's near perfect game. In I want to say that was in 2010 or something like that. Let's see. Galarraga near perfect game. Let's see. So that. Yeah, okay. That was 2010. Nailed it. Nice.
You nailed it. Yes, you did.
Dude, crushed it. So that this was the closest, the fastest MLB game in 14 years. So that's pretty crazy. It's an hour and 49 minutes. Absolutely nailed it. Only gave up 3 hits and 9 strikeouts, 9 innings pitched. Just oh, so good. 93 pitches. That's like the part that stood out to me. The most impressive was the 93 pitches, pulled a Maddux. He was dealing the whole night. Like after 4 innings, I remember thinking, like, he's really got it, but we always knew he had it through four. The question was just always going to be, how does he look that second, third time through the lineup? And then he just didn't stop dealing. I loved it. I loved it. I was so happy. Cool.
A guy like Tanner in this start, although rare throwing a Maddux, right? But this is the guy that I think all of us knew inside of that he could be this type of pitcher. That he could be. I know he's, what is he, 27 now, and we have, you know, some data over him over the last few years. And he's run into some unfortunate events. There's been a lot of movement with him, whether he's a rotation guy, whether he's a bullpen guy. Obviously, last year he took the liner off the face, you know, and that was unfortunate. But I think when he is confident on the mound, when the game plan is going exactly, you know, this is impressive stuff. Is it the most overpowering stuff? No, but when he's hitting his corners, when he's hitting his mark, when he's there was little variation between the catcher's mitt and where that ball was coming in through the zone. And when a guy's pitching like that, you're like, man, this guy's on. Like you said, like I don't want to get up from my seat. I'm going to the bathroom when we're on the offensive side of the game. And you know, this is it's just it's really, really fun to watch because I think we've been waiting for this Tanner to kind of show up. We all thought that he kind of had this in him. And you know, let's just keep it rolling, man. You know, the bright spot of this so far, this, you know, 2024 season. And I really hope that, you know, these guys can keep it rolling.
Yeah, I love that you said that. So that was the win last night. The one of the runs was scored on a balk, which was crazy. And then today, one of the runs was scored on a balk. It's just super bizarre that this umpire staff must just be really toned in on balks or something like that, because it's we haven't I don't know if we've seen a balk all year. Up to this point, and there's two in the same series that both caused runs. It's crazy.
Yes. Well, that's the craziest part. You know, we saw last year a lot more about things like catcher interference being called, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it helped us in some games and it hurt us in some games. But the umpires are definitely watching everything the starting pitchers are doing on the mound. And yep. They're not going to get away. And the craziest part is that they both led to runs. That, you know, is obviously super beneficial. So, you know, let's keep those balks coming in.
I missed the one that happened this game because I was working during the game. But I guess the one the other night, what they think happened was you have to declare if you're going to pitch from the stretch or if you're going to pitch from like this hybrid stretch. And I guess he didn't declare that he was going from one or the other. And that's so as soon as he went to do his hybrid, they're like, balk. That's a balk because you didn't declare. So I don't know if that's what actually happened in both games, in both instances. But it was just super random. I had never seen that before. So
we're going to take runs any way we get it right now. Right. I mean, like,
this is true.
You know, it's obviously not ideal when, you know, two runs scoring and Tanner's on the mound and he's absolutely shoving. And one of those has come off off a balk, but yeah, we'll take whatever runs we can get right now because the offense is just look for an offense that I believe is either second or third in the majors and home runs hit. This is just a very, very, bizarre start to the offense, which we didn't think was, wasn't an overpowering offense, but definitely not an offense that that we thought was going to struggle as much as they have to start this season.
Yeah, they definitely increased in their home runs over the past homestand for sure. They were struggling with power coming out of the gates, but now they're top two in the American League in home runs right behind the Baltimore Orioles. So that's pretty cool. There was a lot of home runs in this series. Like we had a couple home runs from Casas. We had a couple home runs from Connor Wong in some big clutch spots. That was pretty cool to see. I'm trying to remember if anything happened in game one. I think we got shut out game one, so no. It was game two. Casas had the home run in game two. I can't remember who else had it in game two, but game two was actually a game that showed a lot of life and a lot of excitement. We were down, I want to say 6-1, and then came back all the way, took the lead, 7-6. Nope, I'm sorry. It was 5-1. Then we took the lead 6-5. Kenley came in, obviously blew the lead. The worst best closer of all time, honestly, comes in, had zero confidence that he was going to get out of it unscathed. And sure enough, got out of it with blowing the lead. Then we score again. They score again. We tie it back up. And then they just blow our socks off in the top half of the 11th inning. Three runs in the 11th. So that was not an ideal game. But I mean, I was excited to see us, you know, show a little bit of life to come back. Yeah. And, you know,
we were down 3-1 and then we put up a five spot. Right. So anytime you get a crooked number. So a five spot in the sixth, that's the offense that I was hoping to see. That's the offense that, you know, in spurts, right? Like the Red Sox to me, their lineup isn't really a ground you out kind of over nine innings type of lineup. Like this is like when the bats get hot, they're going to be hot, right? And they're going to put up those crooked numbers in innings. They're not going to be like and score a run here, manufacture a run here, you know, maybe, you know, get one of these unearned runs or maybe an error for our advantage. But yeah, this is a lineup that, you know, when they get rolling, it's kind of contagious. And maybe that's some of the vibes that Cora was talking about, or even that the guys in the clubhouse have been talking about is, you know, when we know that hitting is contagious. And I think no lineup is going to be streakier than the ones that we're pumping out right now.
Yeah, no, that's true. One thing that was encouraging from that comeback game too, and Obviously, Devers ended up sitting out the rest of the series, but he had this huge double. It was opposite field, off the wall, almost out of the ballpark, honestly, and scored two runs. And that was like the first time that I was like, oh yeah, Raffy's back. He also walked twice in that game. So he was taking pitches. He has a huge double. And then he gets pulled out of the game for Bobby Dalbec. And Bobby Dalbec comes in and obviously strikes out and doesn't get on base.
God, Bobby.
There couldn't possibly be a bigger downgrade offensively from Devers right now to Bobby Dalbec. And that's not even saying that Bobby, you know, that Devers is doing great. Bobby just does not have it, dude, right now. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, do we need to organize him a standing ovation? Is that what we need?
I might pass on the standing ovations for now, just because of how much friction that has caused amongst the Red Sox Twitter sphere and nation. But at this point with Bobby, and I hate to say it, but just DFA him, and hopefully, you know, another team picks him up and he can maybe get a little jump start or a change of scenery might be good for him. The whole sending him down to send him back up to send him down to send him back up. I mean, he's, what is he, like 0-32, you know, in leading back to last year, I think, in plate appearances. This is a guy that just looks lost. And I think his K rate is like something over 60. Right? 60% K rate?
It's higher than that, yeah.
Yeah, it's just not good. It's just not good. So, I mean, I'm always going to be a Bobby guy. I like him as a person, but my God, when he steps in the batter box, it's just fucking A, man. It's like, all right, there's an out. You know, you're just punting an out.
I was at the game on Sunday when he finally got first base.
Yes.
And he took a walk. I couldn't believe it. We were chanting, like literally at the stadium, we were chanting. I could hear other people doing it. Bobby, Bobby, Bobby. And he got on base and we were like, yeah. everyone was freaking out, man. Like everyone wants this guy to succeed. Nobody hates him. But I'll tell you what, when you strike out again, right? And it's like, bro, like people start booing. I mean, what else are you gonna do? It's absolutely ridiculous. He struck out 12 times and 19 at bats, man.
Yeah, like this is
it's bad. It's
bad.
So bad.
And I don't think, you know, sending him down where against AAA pitching, for whatever reason, he looks like Barry Bonds, right? In spring training, he looks like Barry Bonds. You know, there's something about him at the professional level. And I know, you know, there was some glimmer of hope with him, I believe, in 21 and maybe carried over a little bit into 22. But I'm as much as I love, and Bobby is such a likable guy, right? He is a likable guy. However, maybe that likability is like, dude, just start fresh somewhere else. Like, we don't want to have this revolving door with him where he's like, all right, AAA, major leagues, AAA option, this and that. No, dude, just let's cut him loose. Let's see if he can find it somewhere else. Because if we really like him that much, that's fine. He's not doing us any justice. Go somewhere, see if a new approach, see if a clean slate kind of works out for him.
Did you see the Bobby Dalbec song that Joey Capone
put out? Oh my God. All the songs that are coming from Joey are freaking hilarious. But yeah, the Bobby one especially was that got me going a little bit.
Yeah, that one got me hype. The Pablo one, I still sing that in my head. Like I have it memorized now. Like that one's a good one. But fun fact about Bobby is that he actually has had more home runs in his first 135 games than Casas did.
He actually
it was like Nomar and then Bobby D, or no, Bobby D, then Nomar, then Tristan Casas for most home runs in like their first bubble games. And it just, you know, it's crazy how different things went. He had 25 home runs in 2021. He had 8 home runs when he was first called up in the shortened season in 2020. And it's just so crazy that, like, you can go from having so much promise and being one of the best offensive hitters in baseball in 2021 to getting your opportunity to be the starting first baseman for 2022. Yeah. Like, the entire season, that was your chance. And it was absolutely wasted. Crazy. It's just crazy. I do wish him the best. He's out of options. So if anyone doesn't know how that works, we did a little bit of investigative work. The options are by year, but once you use up an option, it's unlimited for that year. It's just like you lose that option. So this is Bobby's last year with an option. So once he was called down, or he started the year with the team, was sent down, that used up an option. Now he can be called up and down all year, as many times all as they year. Need. I think, I can't remember if there is a limit to how many times in one season he can be called up and down, but it can be done multiple times throughout the year. And then next year he would have no more options. So he can, you know, be on the major league team, or he can be sent down or DFA'd. And so I think that leads to us probably letting him go this year, hopefully sooner rather than later for his sake.
Sooner rather than later. And I think the league office put a limit on how many times a player can be sent down. Cause I believe the Rays were really, really pushing the envelope with that, with, you know, guys who had options, sending them down, and kind of just like this back and forth, you know, ping pong match of just AAA majors. So I do believe there's a limit on it. I'm not sure what it is and how many times you can do it, but yeah, for Bobby's sake, let's just cut him loose and see if he can find it somewhere else. I mean, there were glimmers, like I said, in the beginning, like, and you backed it up, in the beginning of his career. You know, he won that first baseman job, you know, going into 2022. So, you know, if he can find it, let him find it somewhere else.
For sure. On the offense as well, like, this is all, I guess, kind of like going along with the defense, but apparently David Hamilton can't touch a base.
Oh my God.
So we saw him the other day, obviously failed to turn a double play because he couldn't swipe his foot across the bag. And don't get me wrong, these bags are the size of Texas. They've increased them, you know, ginormous. They're larger than ever. And we can't manage to touch second base on a routine double play that would have gotten us out of an inning. But in this game, he's running to first base. The ball is bobbled, and he misses first base. And then I don't know if he, like, because he didn't veer off to the right, he stayed on the dirt or something like that, or he stayed on the grass instead of on the dirt. And then they tagged them and they called him out. So it's unclear. The broadcast never really clarified. It's unclear if the reason he was tagged out was because he missed the base, or if it's because he veered off a little bit to the side and they tagged him after that. But Cora didn't challenge it. He had to get his video guy look at it, and it looked like he missed first base when he was running out there. I don't understand how Hamilton is on this team right now.
I don't understand how I agree with you. I don't understand how Hamilton's on this team right now. I don't understand how the guy. It's basic fundamentals, right? Like, you, regardless of how good you are, or what the hype is behind you, or whatever the case may be, if you are not a fundamentally sound baseball player, this is what we're going to see. And I get it. You know, he looks kind of like a lost puppy out there, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and it's obviously showing. But he doesn't have much of a leash in my mind. And the fact that, you know, when you have the yips or whatever it may be, a nervousness about him, you know, you just can't miss a bag. Like you said, they are the size of Texas. They keep enlarging the bags in this league. So, you know, the guy bobbles it at first where you could have been safe, and you're being tagged out on the grass, and then, you know, routine double play, and you can't put your foot on the bag. it's just, what are we doing here? What are we doing? You know, it's another hole in the lineup and another hole on the defensive side of this baseball team.
Yeah, I mean, at least he's gotten a couple of hits this year. You know, it's crazy that you go look at our bench right now, and you think, like, how do we not have someone else that's a better fit than Bobby Dalbec to fit on this roster, right? And then you look down and you're like, how do we not have a better fit than David Hamilton on this roster? And it's like, there's multiple people that we shouldn't have on this roster at all right now. Now, if David Hamilton wants to be just the backup infielder on the team, he's fast, right? He could be a pinch runner. So be it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like hate that, but he is being trotted out at shortstop every single day when we have Sedan Rafaela, who they've shown they will play at shortstop once in a while.
Yeah.
He's not playing. He's at second base sometimes. Like, they'll put him in and they'll say, yeah, you'll play, but you're going to play at second base. What are we doing? What are we doing?
I don't get it. And and I think we've touched on this before, but the whole thing with Sedan and the stunting of his growth, I'm pretty sure we know that he is a solid, if not elite defender in center field, and that's okay. But the need right now is at shortstop, and he can be a staple at shortstop. And it's all of a sudden not only a hole in the defense behind you, which your starting pitching has been fantastic, and hopefully their confidence is, well, if I get a weak ground ball, someone can throw it over to first base or turn a double play. This guy is oozing with confidence himself, where if he can be in a position to help this ball club, regardless if it's in center or at short, I don't see how you're hindering his development. I really don't. I don't understand that argument. The team has a need, and the guy can fill it. Whether it's he's playing on the defensive side in center or he's playing the defensive side at shortstop, to me, it doesn't matter. He can play both. He can also play second base. So, like, this whole, like, well, we don't want to mess with his development or his production or whatever. No, like, you fit a need. And right now that need is at shortstop. Okay, so we're going to put you there. I don't know why.
Well, and here's the thing, Kevin, if they want to put him in center field and then doing this swap thing later in the game where, like, halfway through the game he comes and plays the infield, they're doing that already. They're just putting him at second base and not at short.
Yeah.
It's like, it makes no sense because he's already being moved out of center field. We'll just put Hamilton at second and put Rafaela at short. They're better defensively when they're aligned like that. And I do think that they're going to do more of alignments where, you know, we have Pablo at second, Hamilton at second, and Rafaela at short once we have O'Neill back in the lineup. Because I think the original plan was when Rev Snyder was back, we would have that extra outfielder. But as soon as Rev Snyder came back, O'Neill was on the injured list for 10 days. So now we don't have that extra outfielder. So I think if we do get that extra outfielder back, that will free up that wiggle room to have him play short. I do think that's actually the plan, but we'll see what happens. Obviously we got, you know, Vaughn Grissom coming up. He's down in Worcester. I think he's playing tonight. I don't know if they've already played that game yet or not, but Vaughn's going to be coming back soon. So we'll have one of Hamilton or Valdez or Pablo or Bobby going back down. If I had to guess, Bobby goes back down first.
Mm-hmm.
Grissom comes up. But the injury update on Romy Gonzalez, who is the other person that we already have up in the majors, he today apparently suffered a setback. He felt pain while taking swings today. So he's going to be undergoing an MRI. He seems to now be likely sidelined beyond the 10-day minimum. And then that doesn't help things either, because I think Rami was obviously who they would prefer to have up here right now. He was playing really well, and then he goes out and gets hurt, and we haven't seen him since then. So it's just been like one thing after another, and then Devers isn't even out there. It's just like, it's just bad right now.
Yeah, it's a real kick to the stomach. And yeah, guys like Rev Snyder, when they come back, if he can add more options as far as what you want to do on the defensive side of the ball, to me, Vaughn cannot come back quick enough. right quickly enough to kind of hopefully solidify second base or at least some sort of better option to platoon, you know, the middle infielders that we're kind of working with right now. The injury bug is biting us, and I hope that this is the worst of it. I mean, knock on wood, if this is it, I'm okay. Like I said, there's 140 games left, but I'm really excited to see what kind of defensive alignments and also what kind of lineup cards we're going to be throwing out there once Ref Snyder and Vaughn are healthy.
Yeah. And O'Neill.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. And O'Neill.
Nick Pivetta continues to play catch. He hasn't advanced to the mound work yet, according to the latest update today. It says here that it's likely Pivetta would need at least one rehab start before rejoining the club. He is eligible to return as of Sunday, but he's not yet ready to return. So he's not sidelined, which is good, but he's not obviously ready to hop back in on Sunday, as great as that would be. So then the latest update for Devers, he had an MRI come back positive on his knee that he just has a bone bruise, which obviously is still not great. Pretty sure, isn't that what Justin Turner played through all of the end of last year? And like, he was just miserable out there.
Yep. Just a very uncomfortable injury.
Yeah. So Devers is uncomfortable. He's going to be uncomfortable. There's not really any easy fix to it. So it's either you sit him on the IL or you just try to play through it. And obviously he's going to try to play through it, but it's almost like if he's not going to be the same out there, then like, what do you even do? We're running out of depth on the 40 man because all these guys we have that are injured, they're not injured enough to be put on the 60 man where you're not going to be able to see them for 2 months. And so unless they're put on the 60 man, you don't have any room to put anybody else on your 40 man roster. So it's just like a backlog right now. Now, obviously there's Story. He's not on the 60 day yet. So when they move him there, that'll free up a roster spot. And he's obviously not coming back for a long time. We have someone else that needs to be moved there too. Brian Mata. He's not moved yet to the 60 day. That would free up a spot. He also could be a candidate to just be DFA'd if he's close to coming back. And then other than Mata, I think Brandon Walter could potentially be a candidate to be moved. But they're running out of spots. Actually, they just called up someone today. Boozer is his name.
Boozer.
Cam Boozer. And he's a left-handed reliever. He got added to the 40 man. So one of those moves is happening. Joe Jakes was optioned back down. So it's not Jakes being DFA'd. So probably Story going to the 60 day is what the corresponding move was on the roster because Boozer wasn't on the 40 man. But some of these pieces, like we're starting to run out of depth really fast. It's a little scary to think about.
It's a little scary. And like I said, let's get it out of the way now, right? In the I guess we're technically still in the middle of April. Let's get it out of the way now, you know, and hopefully once May rolls around and even mid-May and even as we start heading towards June, you know, a lot of these guys are either healthy or, you know, most of them are back and contribute. Yeah.
Yep. I want to preview the upcoming series, do a couple of quick predictions. But before we do that, obviously, today's game, like Jaren Duran crushed it this series. And I just want to give a big shout out to Jaren Duran, even though we did not win this series. I think that he played a great game. He had a phenomenal performance today. He obviously had a triple, scored on a balk, a couple other key hits. He had a couple doubles in that comeback win as well. He had a stolen base, a single today. I think he reached on an error as well. So great job to Duran this series offensively as well. We didn't mention that a little bit earlier. But preview for the upcoming series against the Pirates. The Pirates are currently 11-8, which is a winning record. They look pretty good, not going to lie.
Yeah, they've looked good.
They've done well. They had a hot start last year. Then O'Neill Cruz got hurt. This year, they've started off pretty good. They have a phenomenal pitcher who thankfully I hope we don't see him because that would not be good. I heard the Pirates are calling up somebody to make a debut start against us, but it's not Skeens, thankfully.
Yeah, thankfully.
So they have a guy. Is it Jacobs or something? Let me see here.
Let's see.
Pirates,
As of
Josh.
right now,
See. Jared Jones, that's his
as of
name.
right
So
now, Jared Jones.
Jared Jones is he just pitched yesterday, but he has been phenomenal since he came up to the majors. But no, we are we're getting Marco Gonzalez, apparently. No, wait, no. Okay, I'm sorry. Marco Gonzalez was injured. So the Pirates are bringing up, let's see here, Quinn Priester.
Okay. All
All right, never heard of him.
right, cool.
So we got Quinn Priester pitching game one versus Brian Bale. We got Cutter Crawford versus Mitch Keller, who I wish we had traded for in the offseason before he got extended. And then
Yep.
we've got my favorite pitcher, TBD, throwing against Martin Perez on game three. Just a th quick three game series down in Pittsburgh. How are we feeling about this series? What are you got any predictions for this series?
Well, we got, the 1-2 punch of Bayo, Cutter, and then our favorite TBD. Yeah, you got to go 2 of 3. You got to go 2 of 3. I mean, Pittsburgh is a, they're a pesky team. They can definitely slug you out a little bit. Keller, obviously, 2-1 with a 4.5 ERA as of right now. Definitely not a matchup. That's a fun matchup, Cutter Crawford and Keller. That'll be on Saturday at 4. You got to take 2 of 3. You have to. I'd be okay taking 2 of 3, and you walk out of that series at 12-11.
Well, I would definitely be happy with that. I unfortunately think that they only win one out of three. And the reason
Ooh.
why is because obviously I trust Cutter. I trust Cutter.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think Cutter shoves in that game, throws five, six innings. Mitch Keller also shoves in that game. Our offense looks so bad. Our defense is probably going to give up a couple runs. That'll probably be like a 1-0, 2-0 loss, something like that. I think we win the Bayo start because this guy they're calling up Quinn, like he obviously sucks. Otherwise, they would have had him on the team to start the year. So he sucks. We'll knock him around. I think we're gonna win the Bayo start. Bayo needs some good luck here, but
He does.
you know how much TBD likes to get knocked around out there in Pittsburgh. And again, I think the
Absolutely.
defense, like defense, Cora likes to slap them around a little bit in their off days, like when they're traveling. Cora likes to come in and say, get your crap together. You're making me look bad in front of my family. I lost all this weight for nothing. And then they go out and they say, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. I got you. We got you. We got you. They get out there and then instantly forget how to play baseball.
Yeah,
Not like forget how to
yeah.
play defense, but just like forget how to play baseball. It's like, oh, the ball's coming at me. Oh, I've never seen this before.
Never seen those before.
So that's why I'm going with one out of three. I just until they prove me wrong, like, I would love to be wrong. I love them to sweep this series, but until they prove me wrong, it's one out of three for me, and I'd love to
No.
be wrong.
Listen, you make a lot of great points. I mean, they are traveling to Pittsburgh, and then I believe after this three game set, they have an off day, which is probably much needed. But I don't know, the extension and having Bayo at the front of this rotation. I'm with you. I hope they take that game, and then I hope in a really good pitching matchup of Cutter and Mitch. Hopefully we could sneak that one out, because like I said, TBD, you might as well just, we know what goes on with that. Might as well put it in the loss column. So let's get the first two. But you made fantastic points. I could see them losing 2 out of 3 of this one as well. Pittsburgh is not a, they're not a bad baseball team.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I don't want that to be the case, but unfortunately, we'll see what happens. And this lineup just is not impressing me. If O'Neal's out the whole series, if Devers is not playing like himself, we're already down those guys. We're throwing out, probably Bobby Dalbec starting at least one of these games, if not more than one. Come on, not really feeling great, but we'll see. What kind of closing thoughts do you got, Kevin, to kind of bring this home?
I don't know. We've touched on all the things that at least we wanted to. Starting pitching. I want to keep emphasizing that. That's something that I'm going to continue to keep an eye on. Something that I want to really continue to monitor how Bailey is working with these guys. And for the love of God, let's get Sedan at short and let's go out there and try to at least put some crooked numbers up on the scoreboard.
I will say, my closing thought is going to be that this Netflix documentary is going to be
Oh,
extremely interesting.
it sure is. They might cancel it.
Netflix documentary, they're getting a lot of content, and I cannot wait to see when they cut to the clubhouse and Cora is just losing his crap.
Yeah.
Like I want to see that stuff because there's no way that they're not realizing already 20 games in, like, and this is a long season, but you see it in the dugout every game. They got the Netflix camera guy right over Cora's shoulder. They're getting all this,
Yeah.
and they're not obviously there to focus on the play on the field, but the play on the field dictates, right? It dictates what goes on in the clubhouse and what are they working on. And I really wish this was something that was coming out in season. Like I wish they were going to be airing this like Hard Knocks like weekly. That would
Yeah,
be so
it
sick.
was
Like
to
just
be
turning in
awesome.
and being like, man, I can't wait to watch this. But it's still gonna be good to watch. This the final thought that I have is Justin Slayton is so freaking
Yes.
good.
Oh my God.
He's like I trust him as much as Chris Martin right now. Top of the bullpen. I talked about this last podcast. He the beginning of the year, my prediction, he was my rookie of the year prediction. And as good as Sedan Rafaela has been, he has been better and more, detrimental to this team so far. And we're only 20 games in. Could change. But this, in my opinion, him and Tyler O'Neill have been the acquisitions of the offseason by far. I love what Craig has to bring to the table. I wish that they'd spend a little bit of money on the other rest of the team, but the acquisitions that he's brought in have been so solid. And I just like Justin Slayton a lot. I think he's great. That's
Awesome.
all. That's all. All right. Well, on behalf of the Pesky Report, once again, brought to you by Beyond the Monster, this has been episode 345. Join us this weekend on Sunday for our MLB and Red Sox recap of the Pirates series. We're looking forward to catching you in the moment live. We love to talk with you and chat with the guys and gals who hop on that show. Support our minor show too. Talking all things minor leagues. We got a great crew over there. It's an exciting time to be a fan of the minor leagues right now in the Red Sox. Baseball America has our minor league system with the Portland Sea Dogs as the number two most stacked team in all of the minor leagues right now, which is so true. Marcelo Meyer's tearing it up. Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, Kyle Teal, they're all batting over 300. They're crushing it. They're just dominating, and they're not going to be in double A long. I got to get to as many Sea Dogs games as I can before it's too late, because literally, like, they're not going to be there very long.
You're absolutely right.
And yeah, so follow us on the streams, follow us on the other shows. We appreciate you all. If you have extra time and you've listened this long, you like us, please give us a rating and a review wherever you're listening to podcasts right now. We appreciate it. It helps get us out to more people, and we want to have as many people as part of a happy family as possible. But like I said, on behalf of Matthew and Kevin, we appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time, and go Sox.